having a good time.
Yeah.
All right, would like to call the April 9th, 2015 PFAC meeting to order. Can we have roll call beginning at my left?
John Moore.
Wallace Rodecker.
Tom Hammond here.
Frank Kim.
And Lisa Hughes. Do we have a quorum?
We do.
Okay. All right, with that, we'll take the first agenda item, and that is to approve the minutes of the March 12th, 2015 meeting. Seems like we were here just yesterday.
Yeah. So moved.
Any second?
Second.
Any comments, additions, corrections? Hearing none, I call for the question. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. That brings us to the next item, which is the approval and concept of the financing for the 800 millihertz countywide coordinated communication systems upgrade and selection of a financial advisor and underwriter. Who will be presenting?
I will be presenting. Good afternoon, Chair Hughes, members of PFAC committee. I'm Suzanne Lester from CEO Public Finance. CEO Public Finance requests approval in concept for a financing of the next generation 800 megahertz countywide coordinated communication system upgrade and selection of K&N Public Finance as financial advisor and Citigroup Global Markets as underwriter for the proposed financing. As your background material indicates, the original 800 megahertz countywide coordinated communication system, which from now on I'm going to say CCCS, was implemented between 1999 and 2001 as a fully integrated platform to replace previous obsolete technology for law enforcement, fire, lifeguard, transportation, public works, and other public safety partners. The 800 megahertz system allows all public safety agencies in the county to share a common 800 megahertz radio system that provides each agency with their own unique dispatch and tactical channels.
Ms. Lester, may I interrupt you to please add to the roll call Sherry Friedenrich, our county tax collector.
Thank you. Sorry, I'm late.
Treasurer. I see we get discount parking if you're paying your taxes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We want people to be able to come in and pay those taxes, and so the county and Santa Ana work very closely with us, so it's great. It's nice to have that cooperation.
All right. Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. So the 800 megahertz radio system provides each agency with their own dispatch and their own tactical channel while allowing interagency operability when needed. And, you know, I didn't realize how unique this was. I thought, you know, when I began learning a little bit and, about this and attending some presentations that, you know, I assumed all agencies had this, but a couple of presentations that I have attended mention the Christopher Dorner incident that occurred a few years ago where there was the dismissed LAPD officer that murdered several people and ended up in a ending his life in Big Bear. I've heard that the Orange County response in that incident was cited as a model to follow, specifically Orange County's ability to communicate with each other throughout various agencies. So now here we are in 2015, 15 years later from the implementation of the current 800 megahertz system. Normal wear and tear and advancements in communication technology, CCCS is rapidly becoming obsolete and not supported by the manufacturer and not compatible with new technology and the more complex software that's out. Plans are to begin a phased approach of replacement starting later this year and continuing through 2018. There are two main primary components to the system. There's the system backbone, and then there's the radio and console components. The backbone is the infrastructure and towers that are located throughout various parts of the county that facilitate the radios being able to communicate with each other. And then the second component is the subscriber radios and console. The estimated cost of the entire backbone is around $42 million. Now, the county is proposing to finance the entire backbone and entering into partnership agreements with other cities and agency participants to provide for their share of the costs. And the reason why we propose to do this is because we're the biggest and economies of scale, instead of, you know, perhaps the city of Stanton and the city of Placentia all having to go out maybe perhaps and finding their own financing. If we have one finance and everyone pays their fair share, we believe we can achieve a cheaper cost overall. There have been several agencies, though, that are opting out of the county financing and for their share of the backbone. They have their own resources and are going to provide their own contribution. So far, the indication is that of the estimated $42 million of the cost, about $24 million including the county, will request to be part of the backbone financing. The county will likely request to finance its radios and consoles, which would add about $24 million for a total of $48 million. Now, we've let all the other agencies know that they will be on their own for their radios and consoles, because there will be various schedules depending on what entity you are for the need to replace your radios and consoles. And the manufacturer, Motorola, is offering a finance package for the radios and consoles. So while the staff, we reported in the staff report a total financing of $66 million. The most recent estimate we have would be about $48 million. So that's about $24 million backbone and $24 million for the county's radios. The county portion of the backbone, so of that $24 million, the county's contribution to that backbone is about $12 million. Moving to the selection of the finance team.
I have a question on that. The independent cities that are choosing not to take the financing, how are they handling that? Are they getting pricing at a lower cost than the county is providing?
So there's an 800 megahertz governance committee meeting that meets quarterly, and there's a member of the sheriff's communication division that's here that can answer further questions. But after attending a few of those meetings, what I've heard is there are several cities that have set aside reserves and have their own resources. Now, several, we've been fielding questions from several cities over the last few months on, you know, cash flow estimates, and we've provided some of those details. So while I'm not sure what the reason is for all of the cities that are opting out, several of them already have the money set aside. I think they've been setting it aside over time. This has been a project that's been discussed for several years now.
Well, if they opt out, are they still part of the coordinated system? Yep.
Yes, they are. They're a system participant. So county council through the sheriff's department has been working on updating existing participation agreements with all those member participants, and that's well underway, if not completed. But then any agency that will opt into our financing will have a separate participant agreement that addresses the financing. So everybody is in the system, but not everybody will participate in the county's financing. That was just offered simply as a service.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair Hughes. I know that you'll work through the details. I guess I didn't catch that. So we're actually financing the radios and some of the equipment. Now, what is the service life of some of that? Because obviously you want to be careful when you're financing things that have very shorter timelines, then, you know, you're paying a lot for those items versus paying. Can you give us a little bit? I know we haven't obviously got the plan, but you have an overview of why we would want to, and would that be a shorter time frame?
Yes. Member Friedenrich, through the chair, that will be one of the challenges that we'll need to address, because the backbone has a longer life than the radios. I mean, I think the radios have lasted 10 to 15 years, but when we're analyzing the structure, that will be one of the issues that will need to be addressed.
What's the life of the bond?
We haven't determined that yet. Some of the assumptions that we've been using to, we did an estimate just to provide all the entities of what their share might be. We were using 15 years as an estimate for the model.
Well, the backbone system, do we know how long that's going to last?
And we've been assuming 15 years.
And the radios, what?
10 years.
Just a follow-up question. Did we, because as you said, this program has been in place and it's been very effective. I think it is really a model program that others would like to. I know, can't remember if it was LA tried or something, and they just couldn't, you know, get those coordination. But how did we finance it originally again? And I might have missed that, and I apologize if you talked about, was it cash? Or, because I know that each of the cities, when you need to make capital calls, you would make capital calls and you would have. So was it a bond financing that's just been paid off by the county?
You know, I've been looking back in our history of bond documents, and I could not find something for 800 megahertz. Do you know if it was bond finance, Robert?
I do not know.
I found ones for an old telecommunication system about the same time in 2001, but looking in the documents, the public safety system was not part of the project. So,
is the sheriff representative here?
Yes, and he just indicated he was not sure how it was financed in the past.
I have a question for the sheriff's representative. What's typically the life cycle of your radios? How often are you switching them out?
Well, first of all, I think Suzanne can become my spokesperson because she did an excellent job. You're almost like a radio engineer now, I think, which scares me. But everything she said is really spot on. We have seen the subscribers, the radios that the end user, 75% of those radios are still being used today of a little over 20,000 radio count, just to give you an idea, because again, it's the entire county. So we fully expect 10 years life from the subscribers, 15 year life from the backbone.
Mr. Hammond.
Well, the question I have is, first off, I don't think it's PFAC's role here to judge the economics of this. We're just here to judge the nature of the financing. But I guess the question begs the question of what things does the county have to finance, and what do they pay out of normal everyday cash flow? I mean, do we finance park benches, or do we finance radios? Do we finance, I mean, is this an appropriate thing to finance, or should the cash flow of the county be able to cover it?
Yes.
Chair Hughes, let me take a shot at answering or responding to that question. So the 800 megahertz project, we've known for at least 5 years in working with the sheriff each year on our financial plan that there was a need to upgrade the backbone. So we had been setting aside some funding for that. And what we've done over the last several budgets is we've purchased some of the console equipment, and we've continued to purchase the newer type of radios that would be compatible with the newer technology. So as much as we can manage throughout our budget process, and as old equipment breaks, we've been replacing it steadily with the newer technology. Mm-hmm. So where we're at now is we need to do that the real significant uplift of the core backbone pieces, and it makes sense for all of the partners to go all at once and get into the new environment. Mm-hmm. So the issue for us is, in the past, the county had a policy of trying to cash finance these kinds of projects, and we had set aside funds. But due to the VLF litigation and the Great Recession, we did spend down some of those reserves. So our ability to cash finance capital projects was diminished during that time. And today, I think our capital project reserve has less than $15 million in it. So we do have some capacity, and that was a plan that we were using in the past, but today is not available to us because of our limited reserve capacity.
I agree with Commissioner Hammond. It seems like the sort of thing that should be budgeted for, since they knew the economic life of this was through 2015. It seems to be along the same genre of would be finance a park bench. If we don't have the money, we don't have the money. But it just seems like this was something that doesn't seem to be too hard to plan for.
And if I could address that more directly, so we have a commitment to do the backbone piece. And that's what we plan to finance. The radios, we're still uncertain whether that would be a part of the financing. And I think it's for some of the good questions that are coming up today, which is, why would you finance potentially over 15 years a radio that has a 10-year cycle?
Right.
So absolutely, those are things that we would consider. So the action today doesn't commit the county down a path of financing the radios. It was like an ad alternate for us to consider during this time, so that if it made sense from a financing perspective, obviously we discussed that with our board, that's something that we would consider. But I can tell you today that, you know, our goal is to finance as small an amount as possible to do the backbone, and hopefully our existing radios would last as long as possible, and we would replace those as they either were became technologically deficient or during the normal upgrade cycle.
Will the current radios work on the new improved backbone?
My understanding is that they're not, but the newer ones that we're purchasing have that ability to be forward compatible. So that's what we're doing now is, every year that goes by, as these radios become obsolete or they break, we're replacing them with a newer technology. So our goal is to, honestly, is to push this out and not debt finance all of the radios, but only those that we absolutely need if it becomes a cash flow issue.
Is there an alternative? Is there vendor financing on these kinds of things?
There are, and what we would expect, and we have a fairly recent term sheet from the vendor, which we would ask them to update, but that would be a challenge for our finance team. I mean, if the vendor offers the best financing, we would choose to go through the vendor.
Mm-hmm. Right, but we haven't seen that.
Mm-hmm. Will that be part of the next presentation?
Yes. When we come back with the plan and the final recommendation.
I think I'm hearing a consensus here that it's bothering the committee that we would finance radios. The backbone system's one thing. That's a capital project that probably can't come out of cash flow. But we'd be looking to see what alternatives you would have.
I think, and Robert Stoffel from the Sheriff's Department can correct me if I've misstated, but some of these, the governance committee meetings where the vendor has been present, I thought I heard that there was an opportunity to purchase radios at a 50% discount if we purchase this year.
There's one particular radio that Motorola currently is offering at a 50% off list price. And for our law enforcement community here in Orange County, we actually have a special radio that's been designed by our vendor, who has been Motorola for the last two systems, and we call it a hot red radio. And what that really means is that we have a channel called Red Channel, and it's always being monitored by anybody in the field: police officer, motor, black and white, helicopter, dispatch center. So they're always listening to Red Channel, and they're always listening to their day-to-day dispatch or tactical channel. Very unique. Orange County is the only place in the nation that actually has this. And it's and it gives our law enforcement partners the ability to know in real time crimes in progress, pursuits, officer-involved shootings, especially things that are occurring outside of a normal jurisdiction of one particular agency. So it's an expensive radio because it is two radios in essence in the trunk that merges down to one control head that's used by the operator up in the front of the vehicle. And so currently, Motorola's commitment was they would provide 50% off list if the partnership, the 34 cities and the county, would agree to purchase a minimum of 800 of these radios next fiscal year. And we have met that commitment. We have about 1,000 radios committed at this time between the different agencies on the system. Beyond that, we have a standing, because of the quantity of radios that we operate on our system, we do have a standing discount, you could say, that's a part of our Orange County price book. And we are also working with Motorola. They've done a couple of promotions where they would discount off of that even more. We anticipate that to happen again in the future. But of course, I can't stand here today and tell you that it's definite, but they've done it before. The current promotion is going, and we feel confident that they will do some additional promotions between now and 2018. And again, that's all for subscribers. Radios being used by folks in the field or equipment in a dispatch, 911 dispatch center.
I feel like I'm at a Macy's annual sale.
Chair Hughes, if I could make one last comment.
Yes.
Is my recommendation would be that you allow us to consider the financing of the radios, and if we can't put it together in a business model that's acceptable to PFAC, obviously your board could weigh in at that time in terms of whether it makes sense for us to do or not. What we're asking today is just to look at the possibility of how that would work and whether it made economic sense, and if we can't put together a good business plan for why we should move forward with that, we obviously will not.
My question is, our vote today is just to approve the concept and the approval of the financing team?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, we'll take them one at a time. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could I have just one more input on the other? Obviously our public safety, because that is so important for us to have the needed equipment. I think from my perspective, it's that service life that we're buying something, whether you're buying it for a vendor and financing it over a three-year period, or if we're doing a bulk financing and able to do it, and those payments pay that off within the first 3 years. I think it's making sure that we're not financing an asset that is, we're paying for it well after that asset is no longer in use. I mean, I think that's my key, because I understand there's certain procurements, and I certainly don't want to jeopardize our public safety by not having the equipment. I mean, I've been, as a department here, we've been very tight. We unfortunately lost the lawsuit with the state, the VLF, and so it has really struggled, and just trying to start rebuilding some of these capital is very difficult, and we really want to look at, in this case, does it make sense for us to be able to do it, but we really have to make sure that amortization period is not going to be paying for something after that life of it, and again, if there are some things that you can look at and pay off quicker, because you don't, you can get the cash and then use next year's budget or this year's to pay it. I think that's really the critical part in my mind, because we just can't jeopardize it. We know that we're going to have, disasters, other things that occur here, and we want to make sure we have that technology to be able to protect all of our taxpayers.
Madam Chairman, on the proposal that you send back to us, could you bifurcate it, one that is totally the backbone, and then we could see separately what the radios are. Actually, it would be three, and then the combined.
Agreed.
I'm want to get back to Mr. Kim's remark, and we don't want to. I don't think it's our job to do the work of the supervisors about agreeing whether this should be done or not be done. But I think an important element of this is that we need to know exactly what, not exactly, but as best you can tell, what capital reserves the county has to put into this. I mean, because that seems to be the how much to finance, should we finance it at all, or so on. So I think in asking the question and doing the presentation, you should tell us this is all we got in our capital reserve account, and therefore what the conclusion is.
Which I think was 15 million or something like that they said earlier. Yeah.
Total, I think.
Well, but I'm sure there's other claims on that 15 million.
Right.
I think that was total. Right.
Yeah, I mean, what I can do is at the next PFAC meeting, I can provide for you a breakdown of the various county reserves. But what I can tell you just at a generic level is we've built up our reserves because it was a period of time when we were in this dispute with the state. We have to repay it now. So once that repayment period is over 4 years from today, our reserve levels would be where it was back in 2008, which at that time was quite low, around 200 million. So our total general fund reserve, which supports public safety activities today, is healthy, but we still have 145 million that's due back to the state. Once you deduct that from it, then we're back to where we were 2008. And I can show you a breakdown of that.
But I think that I'm still bothered from the presentation last month where we're talking about financing the new central utility facility,
right.
And we have how many years left to pay off the original financing.
Yeah, that's right. Troubling.
That was very troubling. It keeps me awake at night, believe it or not. And this is the same question, is perhaps it a prudent way of doing it? So you're getting, I think, direction that you'd like to see.
Well, in adding to Mrs. Hughes' comments about the utility facility, what I came away from that meeting, the only thing that stuck in my mind about that was that the question was how much do we save a year from the Edison Company by running this facility ourselves? And the answer was $3 to $4 million a year. Well, I'm not sure that I've seen any analysis or present value that entitles us into a $63 million financing. I mean, $4 million today is not $63 million bond. I mean, why not close it down and just call Edison? I mean, that's the question I have. But again, that's the supervisor's issue. It's not our issue. But I raise it because I scratched my head about it.
Sure, and through the chair, you know, when we come to request an approval in concept, we're asking for approval to be able to do the detailed analysis that's necessary to come to an educated conclusion and the best recommendation that we can provide. But until we get the approval in concept, we really, from both PFAC and the Board of Supervisors, we can't really go down the path of having that detailed, thorough analysis of what does make sense economically. And as you said, the Board of Supervisors will decide whether they want to have a public safety communication system or a new central utility facility. But it's up to us to provide the best options possible in order to pay for that.
I may have a naive question, but and somebody jump in here. But our budget year end is when?
June 30.
Do we have a schedule of proposed capital projects that comes out about the same time for the next 12 months?
We do.
Okay. Is it possible for us to get a copy of that, so we can have it at the beginning of the year, so we have a heads up that we might be talking about this or that later on in the year, so that we can place it in context? Would the committee members find that helpful?
Sure.
May I ask, Ms. Lester, could we do that?
Yes.
Perhaps we can get last year's provided to us immediately, and then after the budget, in the budget cycle. Would that be possible, Mr. Kemp?
Sure. But what I can share with you is that the capital projects, other than those that are financed, are paid for with cash.
No, I just mean the ones that are anticipated to be financed.
Exactly. So what we can do is we can provide you a list of our anticipated. We can, I think, even do it over several years in advance of what we see down in the terms of the pipeline for the timing of projects where we might bring them to PFAC for financing considerations, we can provide that to you.
I think that'd be a fabulous heads up so we can be thinking about it and looking at it in the context of what we would do next month. Because I'm sure that if this were the last one through the end of the year, you'd have a different perspective.
I have one last question. What kind of financial arrangements are we paying KNN for this feasibility?
Well, that's where I get to the next area of the presentation, moving on to the recommendations for the selection of the team. So starting with the financial advisor, a request for proposal was issued to all financial advisory firms on the county's qualified panel. All nine firms were invited and two responded. An evaluation panel was convened to consider the evaluation criteria that includes total years of experience of the firm and the principals to be assigned, as well as the experience completing relevant financings, overall quality of the proposed proposal, and the proposed fees. The panel unanimously ranked K&M Public Finance as the number one choice to serve as a financial advisor for the proposed financing, and I believe their proposal was $55,000 for their fee. There was a similar process for recommending the underwriter. The evaluation panel ranked Citigroup Global Markets as the number one choice to serve as the underwriter for the proposed financing. Now, we also conducted a similar process for bond and disclosure counsel. However, in the course of preparing the recommendation and the staff report, we did discover that part of our process was not in line with the policies and procedures contained in our county contract policy manual. So upon the advice of counsel and to ensure a fair procurement process, we will rebid the bond and disclosure counsel portion of the process.
What portion wasn't in compliance?
There were a couple of things in the evaluation process, and then honestly, I followed a procedure that I thought was in the best interest of the county, but later discovered it was something I should not have done, that when we accept a bid, that is the bid. It's not in compliance to go back later and negotiate with one without negotiating, giving all fair chance to respond. So our plan is to tighten up our RFP a little bit more in that one and make it more clear what we're looking for, and to also provide a little bit more training for our staff and make sure we're providing clear instructions to our panel.
So what is the approval you're seeking?
We are seeking the approval of selection of the underwriter and the financial advisor, as well as the approval in concept, and we'll be back to you once more to add the final component of the finance team, the bond and disclosure council, next month.
You're going to rebid at this point?
Yes, we are. So with that, that concludes my presentation, and you've briefly met Robert Stoffel of the Sheriff's Department, Manager for Sheriff's Communication. He's available for any additional questions, as well as we have representatives from K&M Public Finance and Citigroup and myself to answer any additional questions.
I guess I'm at, the question I have is why are we concerning ourselves? I can understand the finance advisor, but why are we concerning ourselves with an underwriter at this point when we don't even know what we're doing here? I mean, we don't even know which way this is going.
The reason is they can provide valuable expertise as financial experts that are out in the market every day across the state that can come to the table with ideas and structures as experts that we aren't familiar with, not being in the marketplace every day.
So you think it's helpful to you to have them now?
I do.
And how much is the charge on the underwriter?
Thank you.
It was $1.15 per thousand bonds.
We don't know if or how many bonds.
Correct. So if you, the apples to apples comparison is the per thousand bonds, and the range was from a dollar to, let's see.
I don't understand that.
I don't, yeah.
To 375.
Help me out here, Mr. Hammond.
So this was the this
when we don't what, even know where.
Well, we do know. We know the rate, right?
Right. We know the rate
per million or per
yes.
thousand. So I mean, that's the best you can do at this point, I think. So everybody bid based upon the rate per thousand.
Yes. Which is the typical bid model?
All right.
What happens if theoretically, just theoretically? Hypothetically, PFAC says we don't recommend the financing at all, and it should be out of current cash flows from the county budget.
Is there any liability on our part for their services?
That's the real question.
I can only tell you about 15 years of experience. I think on twice we've done that and on this committee, and the board ignored us. And
the real question is, were they sorry?
Well, actually, I shouldn't say they ignored us because they stirred up some more work and homework and investigation and then came back. So one of them had to do with a housing deal. And as I remember, something about the 91 freeway thing years ago. Remember that one? You weren't here, Suzanne, so you don't know. But there was something about the 91 freeway sale or something. I don't know. I can't remember what it was about. But it was really quite controversial, but I take that back. I shouldn't say they ignored us because it did stir them up a little bit and it caused them to do some more homework.
I guess my question is, though, if we decide not to do that, do we have a liability for the staff?
No, I don't think so. I'm led to believe not.
Are you meeting at the approval in concept or the final approval?
Let's say we come back and we say this shouldn't be public finance. We shouldn't issue the bonds. And you've hired an underwriter. What's our liability?
The payment, if I understand, is contingent on the sale of the bonds. Mm-hmm. So if bonds aren't sold, then we don't pay.
So can you verify that we would have no liability? That's the real question.
Yes, I believe. Yes, that is correct.
Do we have the bond counsel here?
No, that's not bond
that
counsel.
Would be
this
the
is underwriter.
I mean, yeah. The underwriter?
Yes, we do. We have Mr. Stephen Field from Citigroup.
Just ask him. That's his understanding.
Would you mind coming up here, Stephen?
The hot spot's right there.
Yeah.
Yes, that is described accurately. We will enter into a purchase contract at the time of sale, and our fee will be contingent on the bond closing.
Okay.
Well,
that a representation.
Thank
and,
you.
And your title is?
Vice President.
Oh, that's good enough for us. All right, that answers that. Yes, Madam Treasurer.
Thank you, Chair Hughes. A couple questions, and I do want to thank staff. I had some early questions and emailed them, and they got back to me, and I very much appreciate it as we go through this process. Two questions. One is on the, as County Treasurer, I am responsible for the school bond financing, and also, as a department head, I'm also going to the board with many of my procurements, and I know the board is really not looking at doing sole sources or negotiated, you know, basically where you're doing a negotiated sale where you're not getting competitive bids. And so I don't know, we're trying to decide on this, you know, the school bonds, they have to go to the Board of Supervisors if they're a negotiated versus a competitive bid. And several of the board members have indicated that then we should be doing basically a sole source document, because our procurement says if you're doing a sole source, which is a negotiated sale, you should do that. And so I'm just wondering from the board perspective, I know they're really pushing to all the departments, you know, you should only do sole source when there's no or negotiated sales when, you know, the other options. So I guess it would be important to have a really strong background as to why we need to do a negotiated sale where you're really not going out for bid, you're allowing one underwriter to do that. And you did a, you know, good job of saying this is a more complex, we haven't done it. You know, I'm not as familiar with the bond financing side of it. I do know that municipal debt is in demand because of you know, tax-free rates, and there's just not a lot of debt out on the market. So when municipalities and government agencies go out, all of the ones we've been affiliated with, they seem to have gotten very, very good rates, which has been great for them. It could change tomorrow because you can't base them. So, you know, I know that you're suggesting we do a negotiated sale here, and maybe you could just give us some thoughts on why we should do that versus not having an underwriter and just going out at the time of financing and then doing a competitive bid.
Through the chair, Member Friedenrich. So for the purposes of county procurement policy, we had a competitive procurement where we did an RFP, sending the RFP out to the 14 firms that are on the county's qualified panel, and we're recommending the firm Citigroup that was evaluated as number one. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we feel it's valuable to have the underwriter as part of the team from the beginning because of a couple of complex parts, perhaps different pieces of equipment that have different lives, the inclusion of the member agencies that are going to join the financing. It's not a generic financing. And my understanding, I don't believe the county has done what's known as a competitive bid financing since the county's bankruptcy. And I know that they occurred prior, but my understanding is that competitive bid financing works very well when you have an issuer that's in the market frequently, which we're not, as far as there are a lot more frequent issuers, and you know in advance what you want your structure to be because your financial advisor will bear most of the burden of helping the issuer form the structure, and so you've got all the parameters set, and then on the day of the sale, you invite underwriters to bid on that pre-established structure. And so Member Friedenrich and I did have a little bit of correspondence last week, and I mentioned that perhaps a good candidate for that might be our annual pension prepayment, where we've done it a number of years. We've established a debt service payment schedule and structure that seems to be working very well for us. So given that we may consider that in the future. But for this financing that we really feel that in addition to our financial advisor, the underwriter will play a key role in helping us come up with the best solution and the best possible structure to be able to come back and recommend to your committee.
And if I might just have a follow-up, I know we haven't approved the financial advisor. Is it possible for K&M to come up from, you know, their independent side? They obviously work with a lot of deals, both competitive and negotiated, and perhaps provide their thoughts, because again, the county has literally no debt. I mean, it is a good name, and so I want to make sure we're getting the best pricing, and it's not my field of expertise. So maybe you could provide a little bit, because you've probably seen a lot of both, and why you think this one is one that is good for a negotiated sale versus a competitive. Thank you.
Do we have a representative?
Yes, I'm Joanna Bose, and I'm a managing director at K&M Public Finance and formerly a financial advisor to the County of Orange when I was there previously. So you just haven't seen me in 3 or 4 years. And I'm representing actually David Brosley, who is on vacation this week. So Madam Chairman, members of the board, Ms. Lester, I'll be glad to opine on your question about competitive versus negotiated sale. I think the most important thing about a competitive sale is name recognition, which Ms. Lester brought up. You do have name recognition, obviously, in the municipal markets. But I think also because you're not in the markets very often, you don't have much of a name recognition. I remember several years ago having this discussion, I don't know if it was with you all or with the supervisors, that they were rather miffed because you had a big financing, nobody particularly cared, and it's because you're not in the market very often, which is great management on your part, but that's not how investors look at it. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you need really a AA-rated credit to safely get enough bids. The competitive marketplace, and feel free to jump in because this is your domain as well, has changed since 2008, as Mr. Kim pointed out. It used to be we did competitive sales, even for like $3 million school district bonds that were AA rated. We would get 7 or 8 or 9 bids from all the names of the firms you would read in the Wall Street Journal. Today, we get maybe 4 bids. And we did a competitive sale today in our office for Dublin Unified School District. That's up north. It's AA rated. It was 2 segments. There was a refunding segment. It got 5 bids. The new money bid got 7. That's very good in our market. There are many investment banking houses who do not want to make competitive bids. They want control over the process of the bonds that they buy. And a negotiated or single source, which is what you're talking about in your language, allows them that. So we have bidders on all kinds of bonds, water bonds, school bonds, county bonds, that are from firms you may have never heard of, Hutch Shockey, Morgan Keegan. They're very different names of firms. So you don't have what I call the security of getting the bids that you want to make sure you get the lowest interest rate price. Thirdly, I believe that the negotiated market, or the single source market with firms like Citi, do a very good job in competitive underwriting. They do participate in both markets, which is one very good thing about Citi. They do make competitive bids. There are firms that do not. They do not want anything to do with the competitive market because of the risk. So you lose some of them that way. So I think all of this plays into, you know, the nature of how you look at your financing. This is a lease revenue bond. It's going to be a JPA. That's a little bit of a different animal. It's not sort of a straight credit. It's not like your pension bond, which everybody knows about. And I think that deserves some consideration. Think of yourself as an investor. Would you buy these bonds? I'm sitting in New Jersey. Am I going to make a bid on these bonds? What is an 800 megahertz? When do they do it last? Why are there 2 different deals? There's a lot of work that goes into educating those investors, and you don't have the time to do that when you do a competitive sale.
Well, that answered the question.
Just wish you were more familiar with your material.
Yes. Like old home week. Is there any other thing I can answer for you?
Hearing done, do we have a motion?
I just had one more question.
Well,
on pricing.
I
appreciate it, and I want to thank Hannon for providing their financial advice on it. Again, I did look at, you mentioned K&N was, I think, $55,000. What was the lowest fee that you had? I didn't see that in there.
What?
Your second lowest.
Was $45,000.
Was $45,000.
And that was Fieldman Rolap, who we did recommend and your committee approved for the Central Utility Facility Financial Advisor.
And what was the, I'm just trying to get a kind of a picture for the utility. The fee was how much, do we remember? The financing was about the same?
No.
How much
bigger.
Was it much bigger?
Yeah, it was about $75,000 for the CUF.
42. And do you remember what the fee on that was?
For
the financial advisor?
$45,000.
Yeah, and it was $365 million, right?
Right.
So it was $45,000. So we're now at $55,000 for a much smaller offering?
I guess... through the chair, Member Friedenrich, my response to that is that while the financing may be less, the work will be a lot more. We're going to be working with a couple dozen cities or other entities. We're going to be developing finance agreements. We're going to be analyzing a couple different structures. Is it going to be one financing? Is it going to be 2 in a series? There's a lot more work to be done for the 800 megahertz financing.
I guess my only thought would be is obviously the other, the second person was willing to do it for 45. So it's I understand what you're saying on it. It's just, I'm just trying to wrap my arms around the total because of course, we only had 2 people bid out of the whole bidders, and the last time we select the other and now we select this one. I just want to make sure that we're being good fiduciaries of the county's funds. I understand that it is a little bit more.
Let me restate that. Mm-hmm. Why are we choosing the high bidder when right. we feel the other vendor is equally qualified?
Because the evaluation panel met, and one of the criteria was pricing. The other was experience of the firm and the principals to be assigned, the quality of the proposal, experience with relevant type financing. So there are several components of criteria that make up a score.
But these came off the approved list that we spent time and said, anybody on this list we can do work with from the county.
So that's kind of like applying for a job, that qualified list, and you might meet the minimum qualifications to get that job, but then you might interview 50 candidates, and they're not all created equal, and you'll select the candidate that is the most qualified. That's the best comparison description I can think of. So
But didn't the evaluation committee select the other firm?
The evaluation committee selected K&N Public Finance for the 800 megahertz financing. The evaluation team selected Fieldman Rollapp for the financing and concept that we brought last month, which was the central utility facility.
So I'm just trying to, can you clarify for me then how, where the current proposed financial advisor received a higher score than they did last time? Maybe you could help us do the difference. I mean, because last month, it was just the other advisor, and now you're coming back and saying, no, this advisor. Can you help us through why for this type of a deal, the other did not meet our criteria? Because last time you just came, it's they're so close together. We just picked one and now we're picking another. And it seems to make sense that now, instead of working with one advisor, you're now having to work with two at the same period when they're hot and heavy. And it would seem like working with one, and not that, I mean, I certainly know that both firms are good firms. I'm just trying to understand. And obviously, you know, price is one difference. You know, I understand that that's not the whole thing, but where is K&N better in this type of lease financing that Fieldman Roebuck was better with the other? Maybe you can help explain that.
Well, you know, I think both firms provided their qualifications and the types of financings they had worked on, and it was the evaluation committee that determined that K&N Public Finance was more qualified for the 800 megahertz financing, and that Fieldman Rollapp was more qualified for the central utility facility.
I think I don't know if I may suggest, in fact, you gave me the cover for a book. We keep our financings in a book and have them at each time we come. You will look back at the summary form from the last one, mm-hmm. the relevant one.
Oh, great. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
It's right here.
It will say that for the megahertz deal, Fieldman Rollapp had six points for total relevant experience. On the one for the facility, the utility, it's 14.
Okay, good. And that's then, what I'm kind of looking for.
Right, and when it goes to lead individual, and the current one, Fieldman, had 17, but they had 43, which was in excess of the 40 for K&N on the previous deal. So it appears that the swing, and also for that was total years, and then the number of transactions that they've done. Now, this is interesting. Feldman, it's correct. Feldman on the last one had more relevant transactions. On this one, K&N has substantially almost double relevant transactions. So I think that's where you're going. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so those numbers, the other numbers are identical to the right of relevant transactions and relevant experience. So that can be the only swing. So they're just saying this is a quirky deal and we need somebody who's done quirky deals like this.
So that's what I was looking for, is what is the difference? Because you've just come and you've asked for one, and of course for us, you've got limited resources. I know you guys are stretched as thin as everyone else, and to deal with two consultants versus one, it just makes sense if you can do it, and what was the difference? And again, you know, I just want to make sure that we aren't you know, that we are looking at those. I mean, people want to do business with the county, we hope, and hopefully they'll come through with, you know, low pricing for us, so that helps. So, you know, I don't know if, again, it sounds like it is a little more complex, if they're, you know, is any possibility of getting it down. If not, I understand at least we've got the differences that they have more experience in this type, and that's what we certainly want that evaluation committee at, not just saying that, well, in this case, this person is better. Why are they, and what's that relevant financing? Thank you.
I have one last question, and that is, if we don't, we're commit, if we approve this, the KNN Public Finance, as a financial advisor, and the board approves it, then we're committed to this commitment to KNN. We have to pay them no matter what.
No, through the chair, it's contingent.
On the deal getting done?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. Well, now, the other question I have is that as far as the underwriter is concerned, do we have a contract with them that we can pick somebody else and fire them in the middle of the deal, or are we stuck with them if we ever do a deal?
Don't take it personally.
So through the chair, Member Hammond, the contract, so with the selection, there's no contract. That contract is developed in, and it's a bond purchase agreement. That's the contract that we would be bringing back to PFAC and your board for final approval.
Okay, so at this point, you could fire them any time up until you enter into the contract?
Yes.
Okay, I got it. Thank you. Thank you.
You're always the optimistic one on the
board. This deal has some hair on it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very complex thing, and I'll be curious to see how what you folks come up with,
yeah,
because there's a lot of moving parts in this one.
Mm-hmm. So, agreed. Madam Chair, if I understand the motion correctly, it's for PFAC to conceptually approve the RFP, upgrading the CCCS, appointing CNN as the FA, and City as the UW.
Did we get that in the minutes correctly? That would be your motion.
That would be my motion.
All right. I'll second it.
Do we have any further discussion, questions, or comments? Hearing none, call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes unanimously. The next one would be the do we have a motion on the approval of the financing profession?
I thought we just did the concept.
No,
it's three motions.
Right. I don't think so.
I heard
Member Roediger include one motion for all three.
I did.
Yeah.
With yes. The CSUP.
With all the acronyms, yeah, we got them all in there.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. Well, that leaves us.
Got it in one sentence.
You got it in one sentence. That leaves us with the public comments time. Anybody have anything to say? Don't you dare. Do we have a motion to adjourn? I'll make that motion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Then off the record, it doesn't need to be on the record, but